Hello everybody, welcome to Accelerate Coach Mentoring. I'm Michelle Duval and you are listening to our Voices from the Edge series. And for those of you who are new to our series, this is where we take time out and we're very lucky where international masters in the field of coaching allow us to spend some time with them to be able to explore their magnificence, their skills, their capacity, their experience, some of the challenges they've faced along their journey, and for us to be able to just hang out together and to explore their passion. And today I am delighted to have an international coach. She is a master certified coach through the International Coach Federation. And as you know, that is the highest esteemed credential that we have in the field of coaching. And her name is Carly Anderson. So welcome, Carly.
Thank you, Michelle.
We're delighted to be here with you today, and I just want to tell everybody listening a little bit more about Carly. I first met Carly in 2000, and that was in Sydney, Australia, and at the time, Carly was one of the founding board members for the International Coach Federation as it launched in Australia. And coaching really sort of only began to sort of emerge and bubble along from 1998 to 1999 in Australia. And Carly was very instrumental in helping build the board and also really influencing coaching as it is today. She's been an active part of the International Coach Federation, being involved in many conferences and also being on the credentialing board. One of the things that's always inspired me about Carly is her contribution to helping our field move towards a profession. She's also a board certified coach and is also involved with the Board of Human Resources Independent Consultants in Southern California. She currently lives in the US in Laguna Hills, a beautiful part of California, with her husband. She's a very active individual, loves her Bikram yoga and hiking, and Carly's also really passionate about sport. She's been an athlete from the ages of 8 to 27 herself and naturally has a real connection with the mindset that causes, I guess, athletes to be incredibly successful and how that transforms and, you know, crosses over into other teams and other levels of success. Carly's had a really interesting journey as a professional coach, and some of what we're going to touch on today is around those aspects of her, I guess, talent and her genius. And part of that is her ability to learn. She's an incredibly passionate learner, and she has a very unique adaptability, which has allowed her to work with small business owners and entrepreneurs as a niche that she had for many, many years, and then to be able to work for many years with financial advisors. And in 2006, Carly made a very big strategic decision in her coaching practice, and she went and joined a very esteemed organisation in the United States called Axelant. And Carly was selected to be one of a few people to actually work with Google. And she's personally coached 450 managers and high potential individual contributors at Google. And that's led Carly to actually now define and make a very clear new niche with herself, which is working with technical specialists, whether they be in technology or a scientist or anybody who has a technical specialty and wants to actually move into a leadership position or maximize their leadership, because they might already be in that role. So we're going to have a unique opportunity to talk to Carly about that level of adaptability to become a genuine specialist and to build a true niche and then be able to adapt and to morph and to take that experience and to go into completely new terrain. We're also going to talk to her about what it means to be a professional coach, given this is such a passion of Carly's. And then we're also, if we've got the time, which I'm hoping we'll sure we do, we're going to talk about the concept of the client's journey and Carly's ability to language that, particularly with people who've never been exposed to coaching. And potentially many of the people she now works with have not actively chosen to have coaching themselves. So we're going to look at Carly's range to work with people who've been done a lot of personal development, to the niche that she actually works with now. So, Carly, what a journey you've had.
I know, just listening to it, I'm going, wow, that's quite a journey. It really is. I feel it.
So if we jump in and begin to talk about your adaptability, what drives that in you?
I think variety. I absolutely need variety. And one of the things that coaching has allowed me is to be in a profession for the longest period of time in my entire life. So I have never stayed with one thing for 13 years, 14. I'm in my 14th year now, really focusing on coaching as my core business. And yet I cannot say that I'm the same person that I was 14 years ago and that my whole way of working is completely shifting because I have this need to keep growing and learning and developing. So that adaptability is inherent in my need for variety.
I know a lot of coaches are scared to leave their niche. They're scared because that's where their money's coming from, that's where their experience is. So what's in the back of your mind? How do you do that? How do you leave a niche and transition into another?
That is a good question. It is, again, I think, driven by my desire to continue to evolve and adapt myself. You know, at the core, Michelle, I really want to keep journeying through my own life. I have a drive to change and to adapt, and I don't deliberately go out and seek new experiences. I wait for the time when it feels like it's right for me to engage in something new. So, for example, you mentioned hiking is something that I love. I didn't know how much I loved hiking until literally a couple of months ago. And yet I've gone yearly on a hike to Sedona in Arizona, which is one of the most glorious places on the planet that anyone can visit. It's a spiritual place, but it's beautiful. It's like going to the Grand Canyon. Instead of going down into the Grand Canyon, you hike up in this environment that's unbelievable. But I never did it in my own area. And so I was seeking new community. And I had this drive, this desire to find some new playmates in my community. As I say, I live in Southern California. And then I waited, and through a peer of mine, I was introduced to her husband, who happens to be a volunteer in one of the national parks here. And all of a sudden, I'm introduced to hiking in a park that I can't believe is 10 minutes from where I live, and I've lived here for 10 years. And now I have this whole new world that's opened up. I've got hiking groups, individuals, and a friend who's an MCC coach as well. I live 10 minutes from. We haven't connected much in 5 years, and now we see each other twice a week for hiking because we've found a common passion. So it comes from that desire, and I wait to see what's showing up, and then I start to look at how do I engage with the learning that's needed. But it is a waiting process, not so much it's an intent, and then wait and see what comes up and then move forward.
So what do you believe in that space? Because that's where a lot of people struggle, I observe, is that they're not comfortable in that space of the uncertainty, of not knowing where it's going to come from. So have you got an example perhaps you can share of in your coaching when you've been in that space of waiting and how it's come, just comes?
Moving into a different, like, niche, for instance?
Yeah.
Well, we have the most wonderful fundamental coaching model to begin with, which is simply any coaching has to have the present where you are now, and it has to have a future desire for something to be different, and in between is the gap. And that gap can be, you know, that's, I apply that to myself, but without a gap, there is no coaching. No gap, no coaching. And so for me, with, say, moving into working with technical professionals, being selected to work at Google and then over 2.5 years working with 450 people, and I counted them up at the end, it was like, wow, that was a lot of people I worked with. And then I looked back, I was going, after the Google experience finished, it was like, okay, I really enjoyed that experience. I enjoyed working with smart people. I worked with the smartest people on the planet. If you know anything about how Google hire, they only hire the most smartest people on the planet, and I got to work with the top, I wouldn't even say 1%, I'd say 0.5% of these incredible human beings. And here I am having the privilege of working with them on their people and communication skills and their influence across teams. And I love that so much. And then I started to look back and go, wow, I've coached so many engineers in my lifetime or project managers. Wow, there's a common theme here. Mm. And once I started to see that and I got that I really enjoyed that, then I started to look at the resources that I already had and what I'd learned from Accelent, what I'd learned previous to them, and then I started to just hone in on it's really technical professionals who are engineers and project managers and scientists and people who really want to improve their communication skills and people skills. And so that was the gap. The gap was, for me, less before I worked, it was greater before I worked with Google. After Google, I had so many skills that I, new skills, to work with those type of people that it became a natural next place for me to then say, this is where I want to put my attention in my own business now.
Mm. So you looked for, you had an experience and recognized that you enjoyed what you were doing, was that right? That was the first
Absolutely.
Part?
Absolutely, that's
that?
The first part.
So similarly with the hiking, you recognised that you loved that, and then you looked back into your history and you identified that that had actually, even with the hiking, you'd been going to Sedona each year, and that was something that had kind of, you discovered that there was a theme on the way through, and the same with working with these incredibly intelligent people who were, what is it about the technical engineer mind? What do you define that as? What is it that's so attractive to you?
Well, I have, even though I don't have a technical background, I enjoy a certain level of detail, which I would never have thought in my life, I would say. But it is true. I enjoy a certain sort of type of thinking that has a level of thought process and excellence about the thought process. And so I do enjoy that. These people, when I'm working with, like I'm working with a very, very smart electrical project manager at the moment who has a $40 million project that he's in charge of and 50 people that indirectly report to him and he has to influence. And so I enjoy the fact that once we got through what's the benefit to him of increasing and improving his communication skills and people skills, and he got inspired by what would be his journey and how he would benefit from this, I enjoy that they are so smart that once they get, you know, a little bit of coaching under their belt, oh my gosh, they fly, and it's like they engage, and I like that. So I'm listening for the engagement level. If I'm not engaged with the client, I have to find out what am I doing and what can I do to engage them, you know, in the journey that they're on. And to have them get that, they're smart enough to then just translate that into, I can learn this. Because that's they're smart at being able to learn. Most of them have not only a master's or a PhD or an MBA, or they have degrees upon degrees. I mean, it's so they're used to being able to study something. So once I provide, and I do provide some models for them, and then we coach. As the coaching comes up, they get the models and they play with them, and then their excitement, engagement comes up, and that's what I'm listening for in my clients all the time. Are they engaged, and are they experimenting? They're my two criteria for success with my clients. Are they engaged, so and are they experimenting?
Great. Can we hone in on that? When you say engaged, what do you mean by engagement, and how do you calibrate for that?
Engagement, in between sessions, I don't know what is going on with a client. There's like, in my case, most of my clients are every 2 weeks that we sort of have a session, and where possible, because I'm doing in person once to two phone sessions. Sometimes if I'm in a client and I can do more in person at the moment, I do more in person. It's just a preference I've had. So either way, I'm able to hear when what's happened in between sessions. So I ask them to sometimes specifically email me beforehand what has occurred to them? What has their thought process been? What have they experimented with? What worked? What didn't? I don't care whether they write nothing or one line or an essay. Are they engaged could be one sentence to them, or it means that when we're actually having our coaching session, that they are articulating something to me, an example of what their awareness is now since the last session, or something they've experimented with and been able to gain some sort of knowledge of themselves about and being able to put into practice with their communication or people skills.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm listening to that level of engagement, and that's very different. At one stage, Michelle, I would never work with anyone who didn't have a high level of consciousness. I was like, I'm not interested. Now I work with people who have no consciousness about their own self-awareness, and yet so the engagement level is very different than someone who's just so into their own self-development.
Yeah.
So I'm just listening for whether they're engaged or not in the journey, and that they're taking some actions and trying stuff out.
So engagement is for you what they're doing outside of the session, and some evidence that for them, however small or large that might be, is that there is some level of participation and sharing and awareness back to you of that. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, yes, exactly.
Okay. And what does experimentation mean? So when you say that's the second criteria for you, what's experimentation for you?
Well, for me, I'm not a fan of saying, of the whole thing of will you do this and will you do that, and I'm not a teacher, I'm not a parent, I'm not a consultant. So for me, the idea of asking my clients what they want to experiment with is an invitation for them to engage with what parts of what has come up in our coaching that means something to them. And so I just say, look, we get this time together, 3 months, 6 months, 10 months, 12 months, whatever the period of time is. And my request is that you just try stuff out. You experiment with some of these concepts as they come to you. If you're reading a book that we're also, sometimes I give my clients books if they're into books, sometimes I don't. So I don't have a process that is completely like you must do this, and there's no mandatory things in my way of doing things. But I am listening for experimentation in terms of trying stuff out, and you're allowed to fail. Try it out and tell me if you tried something and it didn't work, then bring it back to our coaching if you want to, and let's go, well, what happened there? Because that's just as valuable as what did work. So I very much work with mental models as well, and so I want to understand their perspective, I want to understand how they're thinking, what they're experimenting with in their own mindset, versus what are they trying out in terms of some people skills, and because it all starts with how you think. Everything starts with how you think about yourself and other people. So I work very much with them experimenting with different mindsets and inviting them to do that. But at the end of the day, I don't know until they tell me what they've experimented with, what they've tried. So that's my big thing, experimentation.
Oh, I love that. So I love what you said at the very beginning of that whole segment, which was it's an invitation to experiment and there's permission to fail. Wow. So that just invites a whole curiousness to find out. And when you describe the audience that you're working with, your participants are highly educated people who have level of mastery in what they do, I can imagine that must be so appealing. What have you noticed? Have you always used that frame when it came to tasking and actions and activities between sessions, or is that something that's evolved over time for you?
It's definitely evolved, Michelle, and I can't pinpoint the point in time where I moved to experimentation. But given that I've worked with technical professionals for at least 6 years now, it came up as a metaphor. Scientists, experimentation, somewhere it sort of made sense for my technical professional people, that experimentation. But I even think when I'm mentoring coaches, and I've done a lot of mentoring of coaches in the past, I'm pretty sure I even used it before 2006. I can't tell you the point in time where that happened for me, where I went from the requests that coaches are often taught, which sound to me more like directives at time, to an invitation to experiment and let's figure out what has you what's got juice for you right now to experiment with? Because let's face it, there are so many things we can choose at any point in time to learn. And when you're working with a client, it can be overwhelming for them because they've never, you know, they may never have thought of themselves as someone who's a good communication person. All of a sudden, I'm asking them to delve into themselves in a way they've never done before. So just allowing them the space to choose.
What a beautiful phrase, Carly. What's got juice for you right now?
Yeah, I do like that. Yeah, the juice in life, you know, the juice has got to be there because there's too many things that there's too many shoulds. You know, I mean, gosh, with marketing out there and social media and this, there's so many shoulds about what we should be doing and how we should be doing it. I just love, love, love to take the shoulds and let's just do the what's got juice for you right now. And something else may be different next session or next week. So go with the flow. We know what our outcomes are. I'm always clear with my clients on what their goals are, what their outcomes are. So we know where we're moving to, but how we get there is like that whole, like this flow, ebb and flow, and I trust the process.
Well, and that makes me curious to think more as we're talking about, we started here talking about your passion for learning and your adaptability to be able to really go in and be very successful in a niche and then to move into other niches. When you think about, we talked about that it emerges to you that there's a theme and there's a passion and then it becomes evident to you and you step into that gap. At what point do you recognise there's a need for a change, Carly?
It's a feeling. It's a feeling within me that, you know, it's that intuitive piece and trusting that I have the wisdom in me to listen to it and, again, not to the other voices out there that it's like all of those wonderful, you know, shoes out there you can buy and say, buy me, buy me, buy me, buy me. You know, no, I want a pair of hiking shoes. I don't want a pair of, you know, foot high or whatever. I don't want huge stilettos right now. So it really comes from listening to oneself, to myself, and what's calling me right now and trusting that rather than I'm not very good at I've learned over the year I'm not good at manufacturing plans for myself. Me putting plans in place and saying this is going to happen by this date and I'm going to make this much money and do this and this. Oh my gosh, that sets me up for failure. That's just not good for me. Now, other people, that may be great for, but it does not work for me. I have to look at what's engaging me and then I can engage in the process and the process will lead me to a place and I may not even know the absolute, like what I'm going for with my new business model until I'm engaged in the process and then I say, okay, I just want to work with... I don't want to work with every technical professional right now. I was invited to work in the healthcare field with some, you know, technical professionals there. I'm not interested in that profession or the military. I'm really clear on that. But give me scientists, engineers, project managers, construction industry, technology. I've done work with Blizzard Entertainment who do World of Warcraft and you know, online games and stuff, and their headquarters happens to be 10 minutes from where I live. So I've worked there and worked with some of their people in South Korea and in Ireland and France and all of that. And you just have to go with the flow and then, you know, see what happens.
So I'm really hearing this theme, and correct me if I'm misquoting you, Carly, I want to clarify this is the case. This concept of going with the flow, following the level of engagement in you or your client, leads you to know where to focus, and it leads you in your life to make the choices around how you want to craft your business, and it also leads you to where you follow the energy of your client. Is that fair to say?
Yes, I'd say that's true, and I can't pretend that I'm not a control freak at times.
Okay, so how do you manage that then? How does that work?
Well, you know, I mean, that part that wants to control an outcome is something that I have had to, personally I've chosen to, I guess, but I've really had to work within myself and to be more present, to be engaged with and happy today with what I'm doing, to find the enjoyment in life today, rather than the projection of the future, because I used to live in that projection of the future. Things will be better when, things will be better if. And I found myself always slightly unhappy. And so I guess it's called aging, maturity, wisdom, that's what it is. But I've learned that over time, that that does not create a good experience for me. And if I'm feeling engaged and happy with my life and I'm not trying to control every outcome out there, I feel like that translates into my coaching. And that's my, that's become a very, that's why I can work with people who are very highly process-based now, because I don't feel a need to understand everything about, I just be with them and trust that we are going to work this out together.
So there's that suspending the need to control it, to allow whatever to has emerged, because you're working it out together. What a beautiful framework. So if we talk about that, your ability to work with highly processed individuals who you mentioned may have not before encompassed on an inner journey, and that you mentioned earlier in our discussion that you in the past could only or chose only to work with people who had a high level of consciousness, and now you have a very broad range where you can work with people along that continuum. If I can ask, what did you mean about in the past as not choosing to work with people who didn't have a high level of consciousness?
Well, I started my own personal growth journey a long time ago, in the mid-80s. And so I was very much on this whole path of being a better person, learning about myself and how I impacted others. And I don't think, well, I could not be a coach today if I had not started that journey at that time, because, you know, there were pieces of my history that showed up in my behavior, modeling behavior from my parents, that was not really of the best service to me as a person. You know, I think our parents definitely influences who we are today and will for the rest of my life. But I guess I had to at one point just stop and say, this is who I am. And so I was very much on that journey of creating, being aware of oneself and one's impact and trying to be the best person one can be, and then entering the coaching profession after having done, I did all of Robert Kiyosaki's courses back in the late 80s, early 90s, you know, Money and You, Powerful Presentations, Accelerated Business School for Entrepreneurs in Hawaii for 17 or 18 days or whatever it was. I engaged with his work before he wrote Rich Dad, Poor Dad for a good 6 or 7 years on a daily, really on a daily basis. I was immersed in that. And so then coming into the coaching profession, it was a continuation. There were so many people, and then I was ending up teaching because, as you said, I got in pretty early in the profession in Australia until I moved to the United States, and then I found I was way behind. so I had to adapt and learn, and that was a whole new thing to get in my head around. It wasn't easy at the beginning to move to the United States and learn. But then I was teaching and training coaches. I was just mentoring coaches, and then I had small business owners who were all seemed to, I was attracting these very conscious people who were on their own journey. And I remember at that time, you know, back until maybe 2005, thinking, oh, I never want to work with anybody who's not this conscious. And you know, so I couldn't imagine myself working with people who had no level of self-awareness about their life and were not on that journey. And what I realize, Michelle, now is it was such a small picture. I had this small picture. There are people who are on the journey. They just do it in different ways, but they may not even call it that, and they may never have done a personal development course.
And for you at that time, why was it important to you? Was it that you enjoyed working, you thought you enjoyed working with them more? What was the distinction that was seemingly at that time more attractive to you about someone who had awareness?
It felt easy because there was so much common ground. It felt very easy for me to be able to range that deeply. And to be honest, I mean my level of stuff that I study on the sort of like out there realm is pretty high. You know, I enjoy finding out about genetic our genetics and how that impacts us and our decision making and human design and this and that. And sometimes I offer those things to my clients as well. And, you know, I do, even my engineering clients now and project managers, I offer esoteric type stuff to, but I frame it in a practical business way. So I guess I've found that emotional intelligence is something I really now have worked with, and emotional intelligence for project managers, for instance, is a book that I use, but it's a great frame of reference around a subject that is very deep, and a framework of emotional intelligence sounds much different than let's talk about your personal growth journey. It's like it's a practical thing that can cross over now into people who've never done a personal growth journey of their own. But I can talk about emotions, and we can talk about self-awareness and self-control, and I can bring in all of those things appropriately if the client wants to go there through a different framework than in the past, where I didn't really work with that type of, you know, a different framework.
You mentioned before, Carly, that you use models and that works particularly well with this particular sort of client that you're working with, and you're also now talking about frameworks. So how, as a coach, what do you mean by working with models and frameworks and still keeping that as coaching versus teaching?
Yes, and I think this is I'm glad you bring this up, because to me it's like there are very few people out there that I think can just ask the questions and make the observations, and there comes a time where you do need new input. So how do you get that new input? And part of being a coach is to be present to when to bring in new input. The trap that a lot of coaches fall into is they start out by offering all their tools. Here, got this, got that, got this. That's the teaching mode. But when you have a client like who wants to be better at understanding how their communication right now is being misunderstood, but that's the, you know, their perspective, they're being misunderstood, and they're getting back that they're not good communicators. And if we've talked about that, and then I can offer them a model that we can then work through, you know, sort of I can let them understand the model, and then they can figure out whether that's something of use to them. So, for instance, one of the models I love is the ladder of inference. The ladder of inference is a fabulous model for being, and you can Google it. It's out there on the web. It's been around since, I think, the mid-90s at least. And it's a great way to separate out.
Was that ladder of inference or influence?
I-N-F-E-R-E-N-C-E,
right.
Inference. Right. We make inferences all the time, and our inferences are based on data that we have selected, and it may not be the reality, and yet we treat our point of view as if it's real, and yet it's not. So the simple thing of having a model that says, how do we separate out facts from opinions? And then, you know, we make interpretations. And at the end of the day, we make conclusions, but we don't unpack and let people know our thinking process so that they can understand how we came to a conclusion. So even just having that much of the conversation and then saying, well, you know, then it's all about then handing it back to the client and saying, how does that land with you? What are you hearing? Does that mean anything to you? What's important? What's not important about that? There's nothing that says you can't use models. It's the how.
Yeah, great. And so if we can just go into that a little bit more specifically, so that handing it back to the client, so you've shared the model and then you're asking questions, are you, Carly? Can you tell us a little bit more about how you hand it back to the client? That's a beautiful expression.
Yeah, I may simply say, so tell me what you think about that. You know, give me some of your impressions. Mm-hmm. That's it. I don't want to say too much. I want to just find out what's landed with them, because 99% of the time something has landed. It's not because I'm pulling out like and going, here's my model, I'm going to make sure you get it. I go, oh, I'm hearing this person is collapsing distinctions between data that is factual and then opinions which are non-factual. Oh, okay. I'm listening at that level. I've got this is probably going to be, and some, you know, sometimes I will listen, and it may not be appropriate timing. Maybe the next session. Maybe it's not. But I will. Maybe even if I know a model, I will ask questions from that model. So I might say, so what are the facts in this situation? What interpretations did you make about those facts? What conclusions? So I don't even have to show them the model. I can be thinking about that model, and it will inform my questions that will help them. And then I may say, look, I can actually provide you with a model. I may or may not. No, they may or may not get that, but I bring in a model and I'm handing it back to them in terms of asking them, after if I ask them questions or if I do share the whole model, I will turn it back to them and ask them to tell me what relevance this or not this has to them. So they don't assume it has relevance for them.
Mm. Mm. Beautiful. So what relevance does this have or not for you? Beautiful. Okay. So when we think about, as you're saying, this adaptability, but also this, so that's adaptability to change and for you to go into new areas for yourself as an individual and for you as a coach. And now we're exploring your range. So this again is, I guess, your flexibility, your range, your ability to work with people from all walks of life and from different levels of awareness and self-consciousness or their own consciousness and their own consciousness journey. Do you use different language, Carly? What have you noticed as you've gone in and out of the different niches you work in and also the levels of self-awareness? What have you noticed around your language and how you frame things as a coach?
Good question, Michelle. Have I noticed any difference? I think that's a really hard one for me to answer because I am learning and engaging in a learning process myself. So for me, I guess communication skills is a term that I steered away from for a long time because I felt it was too wishy-washy and overused. And what I realized is that, well, let's just say the contract which I was a part of in Google was millions and millions of dollars to basically give higher levels of communication skills to high-functioning people. And so it gave me the realization that
yes.
You get it?
Yeah, I get it. So sorry, keep going.
I'd love to hear what your laughter was. Tell me.
Just that they're spending millions of dollars on giving people communication skills. Like I get that. That's great.
Yeah. It was. And it was an aha for me. It was like, oh my gosh. I can so the language of communication I've learned. Like, as I mentioned, emotional intelligence for project managers could not be a better book for me to learn the language of a someone who's taken the concepts of self-awareness, management, and being able to increase their competence as a high-performance individual in many contexts. So I don't have to learn what their technical jargon is. I don't even much learn, I know some people probably do, but, you know, I'm surrounded by acronyms, like, it just if I try and understand them all, I don't go there.
I can imagine. Wow.
I don't go there. It's too much. So I stick to what they're employing me to do is to help them with their communication skills. So let me be the best at seeking to learn about how to engage in the communication process with them. So my job, I always say, is to help my clients learn how to use me well. And in fact, I will put in writing to my clients, I request that you use me well. Mm. If you don't feel that you're using me well, ask me how to, because I'm not doing my job well enough if you're not using me well.
Is that part of your agreement with them?
I don't have it as a formal part of my agreement. It's more of a like, it's something I sort of add in. just as we're starting to work. But it could be part of my formal agreement. It doesn't happen to be at this point in time.
Yes. So I love it. How you? I want you to help. I want. So what? What is the phrase? I want you to.
Well, I want you to use me well. And it's my duty. It's my to actually inform you how to use me well. And if you don't feel like you are using me well, and you need to ask me how to do that, because I'm not doing my job as a coach if I'm not informing you and helping you to learn how to use me well. You know, so I give my clients permission to, look, email me, call me, do whatever. Because the truth is, I get so few people who do call me and email me. I offer that to all my clients, and they hardly ever do it. I had one client recently, a project manager, engineer person, who would call me all the time. It was fun. It was probably twice a week, but it was always short.
Yep.
And if I was available, I would take those calls. He would not use email much, and that was fine. But it's so rare.
Yes, particularly for a technical person.
Exactly, yeah.
Mm, wow. So there's some beautiful resources for everybody listening in all of that, Carly. Thank you for sharing the ladder of inference and also mentioning the book, Emotional Intelligence for Project Managers, and sharing some of the ways you frame things with clients. You know, asking them to use you well. Another, you've got some beautiful framing that's so succinct, yet very potent in the frames that it sets up for them and how you do that. If we can, I'd like to shift in to talking about another area that I do know is a true other passion for you, which is the professionalism of a coach. So is it okay if we shift into that, Carly? Is there anything
more
around...
Mm-hmm.
around what we were talking about that you wanted to share that perhaps I've moved on too fast from, or are you happy to move on?
No, I'm happy.
Great. So tell us, why is the professionalism of a coach such a passionate area for you?
Oh, well, I guess it comes down to sometimes I find that, again, I've mentored a lot of coaches, I've worked with a lot of training of people to be coaches, and sometimes they just want to be helpers. You know, I just want to help people. I just want to, and sometimes I think a lot of people think I want to fix people. That's really what they're sort of thinking. Coaching is it's a non-therapeutic way of fixing people. And then what I often hear I'm very fortunate as a credentialing committee person with the ICF to hear people who are going for their, you know, PCC, MCC credentials. They have to, you know, live and audio have to demonstrate their coaching. So I hear a lot of coaches coaching. Some of them, it's very clear, are just there to be in the, you know, moment, be in the conversation, but there's no framework. So there's a number of areas to professionalism. It's having a professional presence and knowing that at the end of the day, your coaching is only there to serve your client, get the outcome they want. It's not to have a lovely conversation. Now, great coaching does sound conversational, but be very clear that each coaching session is about an outcome for the client, and that I don't care how many times I've worked with a client, I will always ask them, what do you want as an outcome for our session today? What would be success for you? Why is that important to you? I will find a way to ask those questions or to listen for those answers so that I'm clear on what they want. So it's important that we have very, very clearly a professional approach to the way we go about every session. Now, it doesn't mean we have to be hypersensitive, but just it's a professional presence. And not only that, but take the time to think like a business person. If you were employing... let's say a dentist, you want to know that dentist has credentials, you want to know that dentist has a professional environment, they have forms and procedures that support you, the patient, the client, to be your best, to get the best out of them, that you feel confident and trusting in, you know, you go into a clean environment, so, you know, it's not all messy, so are your documents reflecting the professionalism that your client would want to pay for?
So you've mentioned credentials, you've mentioned having a framework, you've mentioned your documentation and the space that you work in. What else is reflective of being a professional coach, do you think, Carly?
I do think having a very clear a proposal. You know, I never sort of go into a client situation without clarity about the agreements. My proposal very clearly states what the sponsor, because I have mostly have sponsors paying, not the client themselves at this point, but I've done every type of payment structure you can imagine over the last 14 years. Yes, and so I know it's very clear on my process, and like I won't say yes to a client until you've presented the proposal, you've engaged in a conversation, and then the potential client, and I call them potential because I haven't decided whether we can work together yet. And then we've actually had a conversation, and they've seen the proposal, including the investment. I want them to know everything. There's total transparency.
You want the client to know, that the potential client, the coachee,
yep.
You want them to know the investment.
Absolutely. They get the whole proposal. That's my agreement straight up front with the sponsor.
Okay.
Yep. Yeah, well, I mean, again, I didn't do that for a long time, and I was like, there was a secret, and I was part of this secret, and it was like, you're spending $10,000 on this person, or $20,000 in some cases.
Yeah.
They should know that's the level of value that you're... And so now it's like they have to know, and they actually sign the agreement, the authority to proceed, all three, the sponsor, the client, and the manager. I engage the manager in the process because they're responsible for giving feedback and getting feedback to my client. So that's all the level of professionalism is having. I made these systems up based on what was coming to me. I don't have a standard format. I don't have a template. I've made these up as things have come up, and I've gone, oh, what's the system that would support this situation?
So what do you believe about systems as a professional coach, Carly? Why are systems important?
Well, being able to reproduce something and to be able to do it, if someone asks you what's your process or what, I got asked that the other night. I was at a meeting where a person I have been a member of this Human Resource Independent Consultants I'm on the board of, he and I have known each other for a while, and yet we haven't really spoken, and there weren't many people at this meeting. So we had this great conversation, and he asked me about my coaching. I ended up, we ended up doing some coaching there in pre-meeting, and he said, what's your process? I was able to articulate my four steps. Here's what I do. Here's how I do it. And I have a document now. And he said, wow, I really understand now a lot more about how you coach. That's really clear to me. And I offered him to, talk at any time. He wanted me to follow up with something. I did. But it's easy then. I don't like spending extra energy having to start something again and again and again. I love systems because they actually free me up to be my best. I can just be present when I don't have to worry about all the extra details.
Yeah. So systems allow you to be your best.
Yeah, free up a lot of energy for me.
Wonderful. Okay, if we can, I just want to go back to that point you made. You said potential client because you haven't decided if you're going to work with them. So I think this is quite illuminating. Many executive coaches, when they're employed by a sponsor, often feel compelled, obligated that they're going to work with that client. And there's often things around that about their income, the relationship with the sponsoring company. So I'm really intrigued as to how, in your mind, you think about that, Carly, and what happens? Do you sometimes not work with someone, or what do you do to transform it if you don't want to? What happens?
Yes, I know. It's quite the thing, really, to say, well, even though you're going to pay me lots and lots of money, and I have often had quite a long conversation with the sponsor, even the senior manager or the other person may be involved, before we even get to the coachees that I may be asked to work with. And so I've spent a lot of time being clear with them on the process. Again, it's like I'll outline to you my investment, the number of sessions, the types of processes that are, the actual tangible things that you will get, the client will get. But there's the but. None of this matters, and you won't be able to sign the authority to go ahead, which is part of my systems, until step one, you've had a you or the manager, whoever's the direct manager of that person. And I'm often dealing with very senior people, so sometimes it's the board. I mean, I don't, personally, excuse me, I don't care what level you're at. There's always another person who's above you. I don't tend to really work with the absolute CEO of large organizations. I don't find that's the area. I like mid-level management, senior management, even supervisors and individual contributors. I can now work with all four levels, and I have different ways of working with them. And I understand their needs at those different levels. So, you know, I say, okay, until we actually, you've had that conversation, they need to see this. I actually put it in the proposal. This whole proposal needs to be seen by the potential client. You need to have the conversation with them. And I'm happy to coach you through that because sometimes that's hard. So I'll coach you through how to have that conversation and what to say. And then once you've done that and given this proposal, so it outlines the process and the agreement, and I don't call them. I say, please have the potential client call me. So I put the power in their hands. I do not play, you know, authoritarian. I do the opposite. It's like they have them. And so sometimes, Michelle, it's quite hilarious. I can't tell you the number of times I've had the sponsor say, I'm ready to sign off on this. I said, well, I haven't spoken. The person hasn't called me yet. No, what a start. I said, no point in. You know, it's not starting until I've had this conversation because I don't know whether this person and I can work together. They've got to feel like they can work with me and I work with them. And, Michelle, I've had zero people that I've said no to because they get that I stand for them, that I will... I'm on their side, that I want them to win, that I want this to be the best experience, that we're going to have a great journey together and it's going to be fun. Sometimes it's going to be hard, but know that I'm here to have you succeed. And then they'll sign off and then we go ahead. So it seems to work.
So when you've had that meeting then with the potential client, the coachee, and you're both choosing whether or not to work with each other, and you've said that you both have decided in those cases. I'm guessing that initially when you sit down, it hasn't necessarily started that way, or has it?
No. Number one person, he said to me, I can't believe they want me to have a coach. He said to me, I thought they owed me a steak dinner because I thought I'd been doing such a great job that they were going to give me an award and they give me a coach. I said, yay, you got me. And absolutely not. And so, you know, I should have bought him a steak dinner at the end. That would have been funny. We would have gone out and had a steak dinner. It doesn't start out that way. But that's my job. You see, I've got to explain to the client the journey they go on, and it's my duty, I feel, as a coach who's experienced, they are trusting me. I need them to know that I know what I'm doing. So I'm outlining the process, I'm outlining the journey, so that they know that, you know, this is not about them being in therapy. This is not about them failing. This is not about them having a teacher that they have to report to. I had one of my clients this week, after our session, he said to me, so how am I doing? I looked at him, I said, what do you mean, how are you doing? I want to hear from you. I said, I'm not your teacher. I'm not the teacher. I'm not going to give you a grade. He looked and he smiled and he sort of like, I said, however, here's what, and then I went back to what we talked about earlier. I said, I listen for your level of engagement and whether you're experimenting. And I said, and I get both of those things are really high. He went, okay, that sounds great.
So how do you do that, Carly? Obviously with different clients and so on, articulating the journey they're going to go on can be a challenging thing. So obviously you've got a real skill in doing that. But what do you mean by articulating the journey?
Well, first of all, I have to listen to where they're at. I want them to understand that, you know, first of all, it's almost like a coaching session to begin with. I do a lot of the listening. So tell me, you know, what have you been told? How did you get to this point? What's your understanding? You know, what would be a win for you in this situation? I empathize with them. And so I do a lot of listening and really go into coach mode. Mm. And then once I'm hearing what they're, you know, where they're at, what their thinking is, and sometimes then they'll say, you know, to be honest, I was like shocked, or I was like, what? You know, how? What? They didn't talk to me about this. Now they want me to have coaching. Mm. So I really want to hear what the emotions are, what their thought process is, what they've been told, what they haven't, and I fill in the gaps for them. If I know something, mostly they've been told by that point how it came about. But Michelle, it's ridiculous when I find 2 months beforehand I'm being given some information that these people aren't being given. And I've said to the sponsor recently, I said, you know, if this person had been given this information, I wouldn't be employed to do this. Mm-hmm. So I see that all up in the organization, that communication skills, some people have got to be very, very senior with very poor communication and people skills. So I just start with where they're at, and then I help them sort of find out what would be a win for you. And then I'll articulate some of the things that clients have had as wins, what's happened. Sometimes I'll provide them with a letter or from a client, or they can talk to one of my previous clients if they want, about the journey they went on and what was the benefit to them.
So you really create a really focused on the intimacy of that relationship between you and the potential client.
Yeah, building trust and respectful trust, and knowing, letting them know that I'm not going to talk to anyone, that I do not talk about content to sponsor, will only hear about process. That means where are we at in the process? How many sessions have we had? Are they engaged in the sessions, or is there something? You know, give permission for the sponsor or manager at any time they're not getting enough, if something's not working, that they can call a meeting with me, but it's going to be driven by them and the coachee, not by me. I will be present. But these things rarely happen because I make them so clear, and I make it clear on who's responsible for what. And that's my job, to articulate the journey.
And this is what you were saying. This is all the professionalism, isn't it, that you
it
bring
is.
That also creates the trust. Like you shared an analogy with being a dentist. You know there's a process you go through when you go to a dentist. You expect that to happen. And if it didn't happen, you would be nervous, wouldn't you?
Absolutely,
Yeah. Beautiful. Well, Carly, look, there's hours and hours more that I want to spend with you, exploring more of all of your, I guess the theme that comes out for me out of all of this is an absolute respect that you have for your client's capacity to be able to learn and to be able to meet their unique way of learning. And it doesn't matter how much experience they have in their own self-awareness or even the domain or walk of life in their profession that they come from, is that you meet them and be present to where they are, and you bring, I guess, your own mastery of a love and a respect for learning to them, and it allows them to find their own unique way. And yes, you offer some frameworks and some models to help them to find that awareness if they need to, yet your focus is on what they do with that. So I just love, the feeling that's coming out for me is love. I feel that you have an absolute love for them and a love for the experience and the experiment, as you called it, that occurs for them, and also in your ability to experiment, Carly. I can't thank you enough for the time you've shared with us today. I know that all of our coaches are all at different levels. We've got some very experienced coaches. We've got some new coaches. And I know that experienced coaches and you alike will be able to take many different resources, frames of mind, and approaches, and be able to experiment with what you've shared with us today. Carly, is there anything in parting that you'd like to share to coaches that you think is something that you'd like to leave us with?
Just what a gift it's been. Thank you, Michelle, because I feel like my energy has gone up and it helps me clarify what I do, and therefore I can be a better coach and person by articulating things like this. And I think that's the thing I want to leave coaches with, is if you're on a journey of becoming more excellent, you know, taking yourself to the next level, if you're looking at your own ability to understand coaching competencies, you know, and how to really use coaching competencies to be a more professional person, to take them to the next level, to help your clients through your own learning and your own ability to keep upgrading your own competence, then that's the best journey and that's the best thing you can do for your business.
Mm.
Continue to grow yourself and to grow your competence.
Mm. Oh, Carly, thank you so much. I think everyone will be delighted to hear that Carly has agreed to spend some more time with us in offering a live mentoring session for those of you who would like to join Carly and to learn more from Carly. And of course, anyone is welcome to get in touch with Carly at any time. Carly does work with experienced coaches and has some products in development that she's working on to help mentor coaches at that level as well. So I'm sure we'll be hearing more from Carly in the future regarding some of those things that she's working on. I'm personally very excited to hear what that's all going to be, Carly.
Yes, thank you. Yeah, I do love working with coaching and coaches who are on their journey, and as you said, people who are at that PCC, MCC level or want to be at that level or want to aspire to that, and I love that. I love engaging with coaches on that level.
Mm. Well, Carly, I want to thank you very much again, and on behalf of all of the Accelerate coaches, I want to thank you on behalf of them, and I wish you a beautiful day.
Thank you, Michelle. Thank you so much.